Welcome. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I am your co-host, James Parker. Hey, coming up on the show today, we got a full 3 hours planned for you. We're going to start with the GDP number and the unemployment number. Both came out this week. And given this new information, is it time to get back in the market? Is it time to keep your powder dry? We're also going to review the situation of the last person who was born in the 1800s, still alive, turned 117 this week. And, you know, we talk a lot about longevity and retirement. How about a 52-year retirement? Could you be ready for that? You know, if it comes down to it, Gregory could actually handle that. And we're going to talk about some myths about landing a good job later in life. You know, it's not that bad for boomers. Not necessarily compared to what you were doing in your 30s and 40s, but compared to previous seniors, things are looking up for you. We're going to review what happened over the Thanksgiving weekend as far as shopping, lessons learned there. Our guest coming up in the 11 o'clock hour is Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority of Gregory Ricks & Associates. And if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. You can also reach out to us via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app and float us a message that way. You can go to gregoryricks.com. A little chat box pops up. You can email Gregory at gregoryricks.com. You can find us on the Facebook Live, which is already up. You know, hey, wave over there, Gregory. I think we got some people already saying hello. Boom. So any way you want to get to us, you got 3 hours to get your question in. We love to give you answers, and we like to help people out. I want to start off talking about last night's holiday party. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
And I don't say holiday party because I'm putting Christmas to the side. I say holiday party because we're not having a separate New Year's party, and I believe there was some Jewish, maybe even Muslim brethren there, so I don't want to exclude them. I am including Christmas. I'm just including other things as well.
We've always kind of for years referred to it as a holiday party.
That way you don't get roped into having to do something for New Year's?
Anybody that attends, it's whatever holiday you're wanting it to be, it's good. It's a December event, festive.
So a huge crowd last night. It was at the Boeing Center in the World War II Museum. I mean, what do you call that now? A compound? A campus? It's kind of a campus, isn't it? Because they have
Keeps growing.
It's an incredible setting for a party because we're in a room that goes about 5 floors straight up before you get to the ceiling. And there's just a handful of planes hanging by these little thin steel cables. And you start to look at, like, I don't even know what this word means, but I wonder what the tensile strength of these steel cables is, because I'm just over down here with a bourbon and Coke, and the only thing separating gravity and that B-52 is about three
is
little steel cables.
Is that why you were walking along the walls?
Yeah, just kind of sliding like a ninja across the walls. That was me, man. They haven't fallen yet, but, you know, on a long enough time scale, everything fails, and not on my watch, pal. I'm making it home. But did I see why we had to move it from the balcony to a new location this year. How many people were there?
We had given them a head count of 350.
I think more than that showed up.
I didn't count. I didn't ask the team that was giving out the name tags and the count, but it wasn't far from that. You know, from the head count, maybe it was a little bit lower, but I didn't count it. You know, when we were up front speaking to them for a few minutes, there was looked like a lot of people to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it happened again last night. A couple people kind of pull you to the side, and they just want to say thank you. Thank you for what you do with the business. Thank you for what you do with the radio show. I've really learned a lot, you know, and it's actually, I like this phrase, too, when people say it's actually changed my life. And I kind of want to build on some of the stuff I said when I snatched the microphone away from you like a little child.
Tackled me.
Yeah. What I was saying was, and I haven't really said this in public, but this is a different show than any other show I've been on because people come up and they say that. They say, you know, that listening to your show and getting involved with Gregory was the difference in thousands of dollars. It turned my life around, or I can retire comfortably, or it was just a weight off my shoulders. There's a few reactions. But they're positive, and that hasn't happened on other shows I'm on. You know, I do a morning show. No one says that to me from a morning show. No one said it for the afternoon show I was on here. No one said it for the morning show I was on here. No one said it was when I was on satellite radio, when I was on in a small market, when I was on in Dallas. People say, hey, you're fun. We love you. You know, I enjoy listening to your show. But never it changed my life.
Yeah, well, you get to see some of that. My face is kind of well known because of the TV commercials, and I get that in public all the time. It's amazing. Then the bass player from the band, once they had finished, he found me and we had a conversation. Just big fan, longtime listener.
Oh, good.
You know, so it just, that's one thing that makes this show so fun is the feedback that we are doing some good. We are making a difference. And even what I spoke about you, either way, you know, I can do the show without you. You can do it without me. But, you know, it's a lot different for you now than it was 6 years ago. You're kind of newbie to the financial world, and you're pretty versed now after 6 years of this weekly radio show, kind of the Winning at Life University you've gone through.
Are we gonna work on some branding for that, Winning at Life University? That can happen.
I don't. No, hadn't really thought about that. But, you know, when you put that much time in, you know, with the amount of hours. Now, we haven't been live 8 hours for 6 years. But if you just count 1 hour a week for 6.5 years, still, that's a lot of time. And that doesn't include prep. So if you just say, well, we did an hour of prep, and I know you put more into that as well as I do, but you could double or triple that time as well.
Well, I'm
you know, so you'd kind of look at, oh my gosh, when we start counting those hours, you know, you're talking about 600 hours.
Well, it sounds a lot when you put it like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still learning stuff. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, I was digging into the Wilshire 5000 and, you know, got my feet wet there. And now when I see it in other contexts around the financial world, and it's kind of like if you buy a Honda Accord, all of a sudden when you're driving down the road, you see every Honda Accord that ever existed. You know, you just see the car you just bought. You know that phenomenon?
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the Wilshire 5000. I'm like, I'm not even familiar with this one. You know, I've kind of seen it in passing here and there. But now that I know what it is and I'm a little well-versed and I can actually do something with that information, now I see it all over the place.
Yeah, and I've heard Varney referring to it more often in the mornings on Fox Business as well. So, but they're looking, you know, it seems like just lately they're starting to cover more of the indexes. Russell 2000 is getting a lot more coverage. It used to be, you know, you only hear the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, but there are so many more indexes out there, and you shouldn't necessarily always just correlate to those three major ones because there are so many things going out there. It's just like one of the fixed indexed annuities we like has the Mosaic Index, and that's not correlated to the market, but quite a few rotating sectors and performs well. Once again, has no risk to it because it's a fixed index tool from no market risk associated with it that can go negative for you. But that event last night was phenomenal. Biggest thing I've ever done. You know, before that, I guess the Spirits and Spirits was the biggest of that event we did a few months ago, which kind of was about what we had done with previous holiday events, but we more than doubled, you know, at 350. Yeah, we more than doubled anything that we had done before.
Well, I feel like we were sort of relegated to the World War II Museum, beautiful facility and huge and bigger than anything we've ever done, but we were only there because both the arena and the Superdome were occupied.
So I mean, they were already booked, so.
There's only a handful of venues we could do that would be bigger than that one. Lakefront Arena, the Convention Center, those two arenas I just mentioned. There's not a whole lot of bigger opportunities to move up to, so, I mean, are we going to fill up the Superdome one day? Come on now.
You know how I am. That was a big event, and that really tests me on doing something that big in my team, and You can't never say never. I just can't imagine doing something bigger than what we did.
Do you get desensitized to people saying, oh, thank you for all you've done, you've changed my life?
No, love that. That's why, you know, it helps you get through, when you get that point and you're tired, and but you are making a difference, and we know we are, and that's that positive feedback that keeps us going. It's not, oh, whatever, let me avoid the crowd or whatever. It just, I'm always amazed by it.
See, now, because I've been friends with a few doctors, and it goes either way. The doctors that were passionate about being a doctor, they always wanted to be a doctor since they were kids, and they really love what they do. They never get tired of it. But the ones that did it because, hey, you can make a lot of money, and I'm a pretty smart guy, and brain surgeons make a lot of money, or whatever. Actually, the one I'm referencing is a plastic surgeon. Yeah, he's like, well, of course I changed your life. That's my job. Happens all the time. That's what I'm supposed to do. And in fact, if they didn't say that, I'd be a little concerned. So, you're obviously the one that is doing it because of a passion for it. And still, doesn't get old for me, but I haven't been in it nearly as long as you have. How long have you had your business now? 20-something years?
Yeah, I've been in the industry since college, so it's been a long time. I remember you used to always say 20-plus. Now it's 30-plus years.
What about
phenomenal.
Gregory and Ricks and Associates itself? How long has that been around?
Well, it's a transformation. As far as a legal entity, probably, I think, about 10 years when I decided just to brand everything with my name and create the legal entities of the agency, of the advisory firm and such. But it's always been me doing this for a long time. So what'd you think about Faith last night?
Yeah, what's the name of her new band now? Because we know Faith Becknell just from her previous incarnations.
Faith and the music, Faith Becknell and the Music Crew.
Yeah, because...
let me tell you the story about that when you come back.
The wife and I heard her for the first time at last year's Christmas party, and the Hot Redhead's been following her on Facebook like a maniac. So she's actually a fan and was glad to see her there. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. If you have a financial situation and you're unsure what to do, the number is 504-260-0995. It might be those mutual funds. It could be that variable annuity. It could be that REIT somebody's trying to get you to do. If it's non-tradable, yikes, be careful with that. Remember, illiquid investments can become problematic. You can reach us also through the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. If you get away from your airfeed radio, then go over to the stream, and you can do that through iHeartRadio app, and it also links as well through the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. And if you'd just rather email... Now, going back, why would you use the Gregory Ricks and Associates app? Because you can text us through the app. Go to the Winning at Life page. Email, kind of the old way. Is that how you referred to it the other day?
Caveman way.
Way. Email Gregory@GregoryRicks.com. And on the website, there's a site chat as well.
Well, in 2016, that's just this side of smoke signals and or pigeons, the email. Pony Express maybe comes to mind. So still coming up, we're going to talk about the lady that turned 117 this week. But you asked me about my number last night, and I told you it went down. And what we're doing is trying to put a peg here on whether or not the Fed's going to raise interest rates in their meeting that's not this coming week, but next week. I think it's on the
14th.
Oh, getting close. Good. All right. I'm down. What did I tell you last night? I was at 68.
You had a great jobs number. What? That scares Fed now?
Oh, yeah. We had a great job. Did we have a great jobs number? We had a great headline.
Well yeah, 4.6%. Just about everybody's back to work.
Yeah.
I know you've got it there to tell us the truth about the numbers.
Well, I don't want to ruin everybody's Saturday here, but
But going back, before you explain it, just on the surface, isn't that what they're looking for?
4.6 is a great number. 4.6% unemployment in normal times is considered full employment. I guess you noticed I said normal times.
Yeah, well, it isn't normal.
All right, well, let's dig below some of the headline and get to the other numbers here. The one that we always go to is the labor force participation rate. Down. Now, it's not just down a whole tenth of a percent. That's 2 months in a row. It went down a whole tenth of a percent in October. It went down a whole tenth of a percent in November. And it was on the increase starting last year. Remember, it kind of bottomed out last year. And we gained 0.4% over a 12-month period. We gave half of that back in just the last 2 months, Gregory. So that's some bad news. The other one we look at is the people that are not in the labor force, people that were unemployed and looking for a job, and they stopped looking for a job, period, 446,000. That's how much that's a
big, big number.
That's almost 500,000, right?
Yeah.
That's huge. So that accounts for almost all the jobs created. Now, here's where it gets even more dicey. The number of employed people went up 160,000, but I believe, hang on, I'm trying to rifle through this pile of stats here. I believe 118,000 of that was part-time. 118 of the 160,000 created. Here it
is. That's not going the right way.
No, it's not. And if you look at all those part-time numbers, most of that employment was taken up by 18 to 24-year-olds, which is good because they've been hurting. They've been underperforming and lagging the rest of us. But if you take the number from 25 to 54, the people that basically take this country and carry it on its back, the people who do the work, the people who drill the oil, the people that do your taxes, the people that, you know, run their mouth on your favorite radio shows, unemployment went up for those guys. Unemployment went up for the age group 25 to 54.
Core of the workforce.
Yes, core of the workforce. Let me finish up through our little stats here on just the BLS.gov numbers too. So you want to look at the number of people who are employed, and you don't want to put any chicanery on it. The number I have when I do my own math, yeah, it comes up to 160,000, but you have to accommodate that 446,000 that were just thrown off the rolls. So when you do that, the civilian labor force went down by 226,000, participation rates at 62.7%, right near those Jimmy Carter lows again. And we're doing different math now. We're looking at different percentages of it. The number of people who have multiple jobs hits a new all-time high. So those part-time jobs that are created, if they're taken up by a person who already has a job, it still counts as a separate job. That counts as two employed people. So when you take the multiple job holders, hang on, what's the number? What is going on? Oh, yeah, they're doing a parade behind us today.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, the Mr. Bingle was floating around over
was
there.
Was that something to do with that big group we saw when we parked, came in the building?
I don't know. I don't think that's what that was. That looked like a 10K group of people. Everyone's in running shorts when it's 50 degrees outside.
Handing out awards or something. Better be running if that's all you're wearing, cold day like today.
That's a hobby I do not understand running. All right, so if you look at the full-time versus part-time jobs created in November 2016, they say only 9,000 full-time jobs, the change in full-time jobs, were really created in 2016 because a lot of these were multiple job holders. You take the ones that were you look at the non-seasonally adjusted number. We're going to look into what the seasonally adjusted process looks like. If you take the non-seasonally adjusted number, the number of full-time jobs went down 628,000. See that second chart right there? That's the part-time jobs. This is non-seasonally adjusted. This is seasonally adjusted, 9,000. Non-seasonally adjusted, negative 628,000. 628,000 fewer jobs. That's the raw number going from October to November. So we got to figure out what this seasonally adjusted means.
So the part-time jobs is what really improved the U4 number overall.
U3 number.
U3 on the headline.
Yeah, and the U6 number actually ticked up just a tad, or it ticks down a tad if you don't split off the people who have multiple jobs. But if you count the people who have multiple jobs as one person instead of two, that's bad news for the U6. Kind of, it goes up. So a lot of this is you see people losing their full-time job and they get recharacterized as a part-timer. Sounds familiar? Some of it is once they get recharacterized as a part-time job, then they have to go pick up another part-time job. So if the same person has the exact same employment that they had maybe this time last year or 2 years ago.
Two or three jobs to replace the full-time.
But that counts as two jobs. Counts as two jobs created. Counts as two jobs in the workforce.
Doesn't make sense.
No, and it shouldn't, but that's the U3 number.
I don't know, is Trump have this on his list? And Andres, look, let's get a real look at the jobs numbers.
He says he's gonna change some of the math, but I mean, who knows? He says he's gonna fix everything, right? So I mean, I can't really go on what he says.
The potential of fixing a lot. Can't fix everything.
Okay, so
everybody isn't going to play along. It's just like I was reading about his Secretary of Defense hasn't been away from the military long enough to get that post. So it's going to take Congress giving an exemption for him.
I don't understand why that rule exists, but
I guess, well, what they want to, they don't want military people running government. They want civilians. So he hasn't been out long enough to.
Okay.
And I think it's 8 years he has to be out to be considered a civilian.
I think it's 5 years, like Hall of Fame, isn't it? Or is it 8 years and he's only been out five? Because I heard the 5 year come up at some point, but I just didn't get the details on that one. All right, now here's the real important part of all the numbers that are under the headline. When we talk about wages, wages are down, Gregory. Wages fell by 0.1% month over month. They were expected to grow by 0.2%. So that's a pretty big swing. Now, it grew 2.5% year over year, but that's not getting it done because you and I know that inflation is above 2.5%. I don't care what they're reporting or core or chain CPI or whatever. You and I know that's basically that's a pay cut. If your wages are only going up by 2.5% year over year, but they're down month to month. And until we can get that number back up, you know, everyone's getting a pay cut. The few people left that are employed, or even if you have the two part-time jobs, there's a pay cut. There is an argument to be made that since so many of these jobs that are getting picked up are waiters and bartenders, that's going to artificially drive down the median wage. It's not like people are actually losing money. It's just more people are gaining jobs in lower paying fields. All right, there's a little bit to be said for that, but that doesn't spell a gangbuster economy either. So I have my number for the Fed rate hike. It went down overnight another couple of ticks. I'm at 63%. Gregory, I'm racing toward 50%, and they have...
I went up one tick to 96.
No, because of what? The headline number?
Yeah.
It's a brave man. Hasn't Janet Yellen let you down enough?
Well, I'm not betting wine on it, I'll tell you that.
That's just a
not
bottle.
With her in charge.
It's just a bottle.
See, when I kind of, that's like getting personally invested. It needs to be more of me to look at this as a numbers thing, business to be separated, betting can skew your thinking.
All right, when we return, how to be ready for our 401k analyzer. Everyone's number, or most people's number one retirement savings is going through the 401k. How do you know you're in the right fund, and what does the guidance from Gregory Ricks look like on how to pick it? 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. If you have a financial situation and unsure what to do, give us a call, 504 260-0995. Utilize the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. If you don't have it, go to your app store, download. It's a free download, one-time login to create, and then go to the Winning at Life tab to message us. Emails gregory@gregoryricks.com as well. Italy has a big vote. Is that, when is that following?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. A no vote as championed by Populist Party five-star movement would block reforms to streamline Italy's public administration and would mean extensive checks currently required to stay in place. According to 5SM, people won't be able to choose their own representatives in a parliament, and this is the most important point. A result of a yes victory would be a parliament full of bureaucrats chosen from their parties that, once elected, will get to satisfy leader instead of people's needs. What I had understand, and it's, I'm still kind of vague on it, but a no vote is not a good thing. And we're likely to have the euro drop, the dollar go up on Monday. It's probably going to affect markets. And I don't know, that's kind of what I, you know, put my ear to the ground. Sounds like that's what may be headed, a no vote.
Well, that's interesting because I came out with the exact opposite appraisal. I would prefer a no vote. I think Italy's in a horrible situation.
And... Oh, I'm not saying a no vote's a bad thing.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, they're in a bad, bad situation, and they do need change.
Well, aside from how they decide to govern themselves with, you know, how they pick parliament and whatnot, I think the overall tenor here is a yes vote for the current prime minister. His power would be strengthened. The power of parliament would really be reduced. And the point really of the no vote is not necessarily like a Brexit where they're going to leave the EU, but it will move in that direction. It'll be a sign that the country does not want to stay in the EU. If I'm not mistaken, because I'm kind of new to this five-star movement as well. I didn't hear about it before a week ago. I know, doing pretty good. They want to get off the euro. Now, not leave the EU, but they want to see, what's the Italian currency? It's the lira, right? They want to see that come back. And so that's, if they're getting a victory here, that could portend like another referendum coming around pretty soon where they do end up voting on whether or not they keep the currency.
See, and that's why you're talking about affecting markets now, because of the euro. What becomes of that now? That's another one to fall. Yeah, and you've got others in trouble, and that's on top of the Brexit we had earlier in the year, that basically they segregated themselves from the European Union. Put a stop to that. I would just see you're going to see more of a domino effect.
Well,
if this goes that way,
it would hurt our economy somewhat. We have like a tangent connection to Europe because they buy more of our goods than any other continent off of North America, and their purchasing power would go down. It would be harder for us to sell. Consequently, it would be easier for them to sell stuff to us here. Goods coming out of Europe would be a lot cheaper, but Europe's not really a manufacturing hub and powerhouse it once was. We know most of our toys get snapped together in Asia somewhere. But then there's also the case to be made that if you were going to go be a tourist in Europe and the euro's getting crushed, then your dollars would go further, so that'd be good. Consequently, it would be harder for them to come over and tourist junkets in America, and they'd probably spend less. So, yeah, there's a lot of ripple effects in just dealing with the currency, but that's not even going to be dealt with here. This sounds like some sort of just wonky constitutional reforms, but it's so weird that the economy is hinging on all of these votes. The economy is supposed to be hinging on profits and manufacturing and employment and productivity and GDP. Too many times it's too intertwined with government to where we're depending on the votes of people to keep things sane.
According to this article on CNBC, officials and senior bankers, according to various media reports, anticipate that up to 8 of Italy's troubled lenders are at risk of failure should Renzi lose the upcoming referendum. Let's see. Green told CNBC, in my view, the biggest risk is actually for the banking sector, even more so than political risk. and there will be some political instability. So something to watch out for on Monday.
I didn't read that part. So does that mean Renzi's in favor of some sort of bailout package that's not going to happen if he loses? Because he also said that if the vote comes back no, he's going to step down.
Yeah, no vote could conceivably cause financial instability and possibly even panic among investors. If you have some banks go down, then it's off to the races. This is the third largest Eurozone economy, and it's been weakened by a deep recession. So this is an important vote coming up Monday. And then we've got the Fed meeting coming up, which we're on opposite ends of rate hike. James just, he doesn't believe in rate hike, and he's like, prove it to me. Prove me you can throw the ball deep, and then we'll get out the box.
You know, it went down 2% since the show started. I'm at 61 now. 61. I'm almost on the other side of 50. It's going to happen.
Oh, you're not even being serious now.
Gregory, the underlying numbers, every single number under the headline is negative.
But then, you know, if this does cause ripples, this actually
could be Janet's excuse.
Now I'm at 94.
There you go.
I done fell 2%.
See, now my stinky attitude's rubbing off on you. And I don't want to ruin the pristine snow you got over there. Well,
but they're really wanting to raise rates. They're just looking for it.
No, they don't. They really want you to think they want to raise rates. What do the polls say? Because then we can go the opposite of whatever the polls are saying in Italy. Because if they're saying this thing's going to pass by like 55% to 45%, well, you can go ahead and clock it as a no, given the job polls have done so far in 2016. Because Brexit, we forget, Brexit wasn't even that close. It was like a 7, in some polls, a 10-point lead against Brexit going into the vote, and it came out and they lost. Have any info on that? That'd be a great little experiment.
Yeah. It might take a few minutes to see if there's some. Okay, computer. Oh, they want to throw up a Verizon commercial. Vetoed that. Let's see, what was I seeing here? In the final polls before official blackout November 18th, the no camp was in front, 53.5% support. The betting markets also believe a no vote is likely, giving it 3/10 odds of coming out top, equal to 77%. The yes vote was 9-4, equivalent to 31%. Man, that's a huge slant already.
All right, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be a yes.
But that's the betters, but the actual polls are showing it close. You know, the no vote's 53.5. That's a close vote. But the betters have it a bigger margin.
And I don't mean for this to be Italy Day on the show, but let's stick with Italy and tell the story of Emma Murano. What you got there? I know, doing pretty good, huh? Emma Murano is thought to be the oldest person in the world, and now she is the last person to be born in the 1800s. She celebrated her 117th birthday on Tuesday. So this is the only person that's made it for three centuries still standing. 1800s, 1900s, and 2000s. She was born November 29th, 1899, 4 years before the Wright brothers invented the airplane. She lost her fiancé in World War I, which is amazing. And she's older than Angie's mom. Oh, just I thought you were just sitting over there looking, asking for it.
Hey, did you mention what she ate every day, her diet?
No, we didn't mention that during the week on the Daily Wrap. You know, we kind of speed through these things during the week because we don't have as much time. 2 raw eggs a day. So you see 2 raw eggs and a fried egg every day, but she kind of had to back off here in her older years. And I think that's all she eats every day. Is that all she eats? Is that the only thing she eats, or is that included in her diet of other things?
I read it was 1 cooked egg and 1 raw egg and some type of raw meat because her teeth are not well, so she can't chew. So, yeah.
Raw meat?
Raw eggs, raw meat.
I'm starting to like this woman.
Where is she from again?
Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the Italy subject this morning.
Yeah, this is Super Mario's great-grandmother here. So, this is a trip. She worked in a factory until she was 65. Then she retired. She's been on the government dole since then. And everyone's racing through the math real quick. Hang on, retired at 65. She's 117 now. That's right. She's been drawing a check for 52 years. You think she got her Italian equivalent of Social Security worth it? Anyway, we'll continue with this story because it's got some good lessons for longevity in your investments. 504-260-0995 if you have a situation. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. May we all.
Welcome back. Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. That's Florida Georgia Line, May We All. Kind of like moved up my favorite song for right now. I have lots of favorites, though. It just keeps piling up. My top 10 has like 30 songs.
Yeah. We're thinking about calling it the top 30.
Our friend in Italy, that's 117 years old, in 1899. That year was the first known use of the word automobile.
Was it a horseless carriage before that, or a steam carriage or something? Automobile.
Opel manufactured its first automobile that year. Leaders of six Australian colonies meet in Melbourne to discuss a confederation. How did that go?
They invented Australia, yeah. Keep going through your little this day in history here, because you could also add to that it's 9 years before the Cubs last won the World Series, except they screwed up that great stat. when she was born, the countries existed, the Ottoman Empire and Prussia. Those countries still existed.
The president of France died in office that year.
Anyone we'd know? Jean, Jacques, Pierre, something.
Felix Faure.
Yeah, I was way off.
Let's see. Stanley Cup, Mont Shamrock sweep Queens U in two games.
The Montreal Shamrocks? That's a little before my time.
Yeah, I don't get. And then there was in two games, so I guess was that best of three?
Must be.
Congress authorizes the Lafayette silver dollar.
Never even heard of that.
None. I don't have one.
Do you want one? Do you expect to have one? Do you even collect coins?
I don't. Here's how I collect them. If there's change in my pocket, we used to have to buy lots of CDs to burn and do everything.
Yeah.
And I have these towers used to cover the CDs, so I have a few of them in my closet. I'll just, whatever's in my pocket, it goes in there and stays there forever, I guess, because I never go back for the change. So if that's collecting, it's not intentional, but it just builds up.
Yeah, that's not quite what they mean by coin collecting.
Okay, well, I'm piling up the change then. Windsor Luxury Hotel in New York City catches fire, 92 die.
That's horrible, Gregory.
Treaty of Paris ratifies, ends war. Spain cedes Puerto Rico to the U.S.
Puerto Rico, Philippines, and Cuba, they lost in that one, didn't they?
Yeah, there was also, we acquired another island.
Guam. It was Guam, wasn't it? Or Samoa? Was it Samoa? You're right, it was one of those.
Wake Island in the Pacific. U.S. takes possession of Wake Island in the Pacific.
I'll just get everything wrong today.
Yeah, but when you pull out the year she was born, it's amazing what all happened.
Okay, so now let's talk about how this delves over and why are we talking about this on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Because you have financial tools that can protect against the living that long. And I like the description here. there's two sides of life insurance companies. The life insurance policies we're all used to and annuities or fixed annuities. Life insurance protects against not living long enough. Annuities protect against living too long. And even if you live to 117, you can go get a financial product that will clock you a check every month through age 117.
Yes.
Even if you buy it at like age 70, we're talking like 47 years of checks.
We're talking about a fixed indexed annuity with an income rider, a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit. So in that case, and here's one thing I always say, technically you could live long enough in a low enough interest rate world, drawing income, and the underlying account can run out of money. And in our friend's case here, the underlying account would have ran out of money, and it still sends her a check. If this scenario played out for somebody turning 65 or having picked up that, and income riders are typically at 6.5% compounding. 6.5% would get, you know, let's just say she put 250K in, deferred it for 10 years. She's going to be close to 500,000 at 6.5%. There's also a bonus involved. So we're getting right in that neighborhood. Then she turns on a check and say it's 5% income from that when she turns it on, say in her 70s. And she's drawing roughly about 24,000 and some change. If we, you know, the math is if it is a half a million, 5% is 25,000 a year. She would draw that check, plus assuming she didn't work for the state of Louisiana in some public system where she's excluded from Social Security. So we assume she's in Social Security and say she's getting $1,500 a month. So she's drawing those two checks from now on, no matter how long she lives. So if she goes to 125, that income rider check would keep going. Where else can you create your own personal pension like that? And that's what that's for. Because now, from her perspective, do you think she was, yeah, I lived way too long? We're looking at from that standpoint. Living, and here's where the living too long is. If you didn't have that financial tool, you did because you ran out of money. And that's the number one question retirees have. Will I run out of money? And you can build your portfolio in a way to help avoid that from happening, living too long. Now, if you go to the bank, well, I don't want the fixed annuity. I want to go to a bank. I want to put my money, ladder CDs. And if you're taking a percentage of more than, say, a couple percent, you have a spend down happening. So when the account runs out at the bank, would the bank keep sending you monthly checks?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Well, what about Wall Street? We know Wall Street's correlated to risk. But you could get portfolio of bonds, spending the interest rate. You have credit risk, default risk, interest rate risk, credit risk, default risk. Three major risks there. And they're not guaranteed principal tools. So you could overspend income. Some of the risk could affect it over the long term as well. So if the account, and we'll use our brokerage firm, Custodian Fidelity Investments, if you run out of money at Fidelity Investments that's correlated to risk, what happens to the monthly check?
Stops.
It stops. So then with a fixed indexed annuity with a guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit income rider, and maybe that wasn't all of her, she really pumped money into her 401k at the furniture factory. So she might have more than that, but she takes that $250,000 and puts into that financial tool and defers it for 10 years. She could take the other $250,000, say, and she has a half a million. Well, I'm going to live off that for 10 years because at 0%, I can take out $25,000. And that puts this other block of money to guarantee my income no matter how long I live. So we've just talked about three financial worlds. Banking, the checks can stop. Wall Street, the checks can stop. Insured money, or the insurance world, the checks will just keep going. How about that?
That means that if people are going to start living longer, live until age 117, people aren't going to start retiring until age 90, maybe 100, maybe in the next generation. Wouldn't that be kind of cool? Think of the productivity that we're missing because all these people have to jump out of the workforce when they're the most experienced, they have the most skills, and you know that they've been working at that job forever. You just can't replace that easily. And actually, we're going to talk about this coming up in the noon hour. I found a great little rundown here on some statistics about people who are working later in life, or more consequently, if you've lost your job and you're doing a job search later in life. There's some numbers out there that make you think, well, it's not so bad. Now, granted, most people don't do as well, and it's not as easy as when they were in their 30s, 40s, and 50s finding that new job. But it is way better than it was for our grandparents' generation and any time before that. Of course, they were basically not even expected to live that long. But, you know, this whole getting older thing doesn't mean you're going to be like when. Think about what 80 meant when we were kids. 80 meant you were old, decrepit. You probably looked like the crypt keeper, or you definitely were not in a position to work. I had lunch with a guy this week, 84 years old, still an orthodontist, still working. Being 80 is not now, isn't being 80. Two generations ago.
I could see the retirement age shift just because you're wanting to work, you enjoy it. Now, if it's something you hate, yeah, I need to retire from this as soon as I can so I can move on to doing something I want. I think retirement means you have options.
And you'll have money to enjoy those options. Coming up next, Wes Blanchard. He's the estate planning attorney of Gregory Ricks and Associates and the Total Wealth Authority. If you have a financial or estate planning question, not quite sure what to do, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. It's Winning It Live, the weekly wrap. We do this every Saturday. We started at 10. We go until 1. Then following us is Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo. He's actually a member of our Total Wealth Authority. He and others were introduced last night at the holiday event. And another member is joining us this hour, Wes Blanchard of W.J. Blanchard Law. Estate planning.
See, you talk too much about Italy. Now you're like, estate planning.
Estate
the planning. You like it the right of the wheel.
And the trusts.
All right. My Italian accent is just Mario. It's let's go Mario Kart. That's all I know. All right. 504-260-0995. Wes Blanchard, thanks for joining us. We were talking earlier in the week about this the new accessibility that technology has given us. You know, you have the people who hear us from hinterlands or hear us from really not that far away, but maybe it's not convenient. I believe that we just take on a new client from Zachary last month. And, you know, we have people calling us now from Mobile, Alabama, and from kind of up in Gregory's hometown area of the Hattiesburg. And it's stretching out. And I imagine a lot of that overlaps with you as well. The thing that brought it up, though, is the Black Friday weekend or the Thanksgiving weekend. And over that big shopping holiday, that big shopping extravaganza, for the first time, more people shopped online than actually went to stores. It was 99 million people went into a store over the weekend to do some Christmas shopping. 109 million people shopped online. And our business is changing right along with it. There's people that just, they could come in, they just don't want to. So is that hard for a lawyer to do? Can you accommodate, like, remote clients? Is there some pitfalls in there in the legal profession that a lot of us don't have? Because, you know, once you cross a state boundary, a lot of your rules change.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, I think you can accommodate that. But like you said, obviously you can only practice where you're licensed. The most important thing, I think, to keep in mind is that you have an attorney-client relationship. So you do want to keep most of what you guys talk about confidential and between you and your client. So to the extent that you're using technology, obviously you want to make sure it's secure. And then secondly, you would want to make sure that the folks who have access to that are the only folks that you guys are comfortable having access to that. So I think for an attorney, that would be your number one priority. But yeah, I mean, technology is, you know, it's beneficial in a great many ways. And, you know, it's become something I think it's not just beneficial sometimes. You know, we talk all the time about how the LegalZoom and those wills that you pull off of the internet, you know, their content isn't always bad, but they're not valid most of the time. You know, folks pull it off of the will and they say, okay, well, this is close.
You're comfortable saying that they're not valid most of the time.
Well, yeah, because look, remember, you're pulling a blank document off. And so what you get is something that still needs to be notarized. But first of all, it's got to say what you want it to say. So when you go about changing the language and using different words, you want to make sure that they're used in their right legal capacity. So you obviously that's a huge pitfall. It's a piece of technology that has made access to estate planning that much easier, and so it's a really good idea from that perspective. But it's really a trap. You have to make sure that if you're going to wander in there, that you have somebody who's willing to look over that for you, that you know who can make sure that all of the legal requirements are taken care of from that perspective. You know, it's. Again, it's sort of a double-edged sword. It's something that gives you a little bit of availability and easy access, but you know you got to tread lightly.
All right, but here's the next prediction, and something Gregory and I were talking about on Monday on the Daily Wrap is you're going to see this sort of migration away from people having to do this remote connection out of necessity because they're too far away into absolute convenience. Because just on a personal level, what I saw with my own eyeballs. Is instead of seeing the hot redhead, my wife, get up, get dressed, get the kids wrangled in the car and throw them in the van and go to town and go wait in line at a store and fight the crowds and then get your item and then check out and then tote it home and then unload it. And then we got to take it back to our house because we're at Granny and Grampy's. She was shopping online, but it goes even far more convenient than that. She was curled up in her little pajama pants on my parents' couch, on Granny and Grampy's couch, on her phone, and my dad, Grampy, says, hey, what are you doing there? She's like, oh, I'm just doing some shopping. He goes, well, you can go get on my computer if you want. You know, the office is right there. I'll go turn it on. No, I'm fine right here, is her reply. She didn't want to get off the couch. So you're going to have people who could drive the 6 blocks to your office just as easy as they wanted to, but they're going to demand the convenience of being able to do, a go-to meeting or a video conference or, you know, maybe just an old phone call, but people are getting so used to this convenience. You're going to have to become half your job is going to, you're going to be the virtual lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could see it approaching that direction. I think certainly it's a lot more plausible with, you know, our age group. But with the clientele that I'm dealing with currently, you know, they're a little older than that. So they appreciate the formality and coming in and sitting down and getting a face to face because, look, another part of being an attorney is, look, you're counseling folks. So they have to trust you. They have to know that what you say is worth its weight. And so a lot of that comes from a face-to-face meeting. You get to know someone. You can see if they're, you know, giving you the runaround or if they're just sort of talking your head off so that you get confused and ultimately say, I must need him because yeah. I don't understand what he's saying anyway. That's not how it should be. So I think a lot of that is done through a face-to-face meeting.
Well, you know what's going to happen is in many of these professionals' offices, you're going to see in every office, like in every office you have a break room, in every office you have X, Y, and Z, there's going to be a place for the video conference. You're going to have some sort of signage on the wall. It's going to either have to be properly lit or you're going to have to add some actual stage lights or whatever. It can't be like your smooth little corner office where the whole background's the window because then it looks like, what are you doing? What are you, in a parking lot? You know?
Yeah.
So you're going to have like a space set up in all these professional businesses for video conference, and it's going to be a little mini TV set.
That's going to be pretty neat.
See, you need to get to work on that. You got to start picking out what part of the office you're going to have set up for these video conferences.
Adjust some lighting.
Well, because if you don't have a proper background, then you're going to look like a slob, and you got to keep up with everyone else, or this will be your advantage until the other slobs catch up.
That's a good point. But then you have to tie your tie every day at that point. You know, that's a little much, isn't it? If you're going to be on the video conference call, you know, you.
Well, as soon as the video conference is over, you can take that tie off. I mean, you can be wearing, you know, I don't know, jams from the waist down. You just got to look good from here up.
That's true.
Y'all remember jams?
Well, you can go with the old news anchor special, right? Shorts from the waist down.
A lot of them really do that, by the way. I've worked at TV stations.
That's pretty awesome.
All right, so your thoughts on last night's party.
Awesome event. That was my first time being actually to the World War II Museum. Last time I went, it was still the D-Day Museum. That gives you an idea how long ago it was.
Whoa, Wes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were in the original building across the street. We're in like a campus now. This is building number 28 or something that they have going on there.
Yeah, it was an amazing party. A great venue for it. The wife and I were spectacularly, you know, surprised that it had changed so much since we had been. I think we went on a field trip or something when it first opened, and so that's how we had initially gotten it. But neither one of us had been back since.
How old are you? You don't have to answer that. You don't have
what. Junior high school field trip.
Yeah, it was one of those. And but no, the party was amazing. It was great to run into all the clients and see everybody, you know, rubbing elbows and having a good time. And, you know, even a few people, I think, even danced a little bit. So that was fun.
Did you get a bunch of thank yous?
Yeah. You know, it's always fun to sort of run into everybody in a much more social setting where you're not necessarily getting down to business. You know, you're sharing a glass of wine and just talking about what you guys have been up to lately and how the family's doing and things like that. So, yeah, it's definitely it was a nice event. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that catches me off guard because I don't get that a lot. I asked Gregory if he's used to it. He says he hears a lot, but it never gets old.
Yeah.
But anyone pull you aside and start to ask you, like, hey, I got a situation here. Anyone try and force some business on you in the Christmas party?
No, nothing situationally.
Nice.
And, yeah, so that was good. It was nice to just sort of to keep it informal and like I said, just enjoy each other's company outside of business for a bit. So we were doing a good job with that. So I was happy about that. Yeah.
I had three
of them
that
tried to do some business.
Tried to talk a little business.
I had people just asking me about radio period, but people don't come to me for financial or estate planning advice. I think they know better at this point. I have a lot of people who want to talk politics with me, and that was not the night to talk politics with me at all. What do you think is going to happen? I don't know, dude. I'm in line to get a bourbon and Diet Coke, okay?
That's it. Yeah.
That's what's about to happen, all right? That's as far as in the future as I can see. I think I got to get something for the hot redhead, too. That's all the predicting I'm doing for now.
Fair enough, yeah. But, yeah, I guess I had a pretty pleasant experience in that regard, so I didn't have too much of that.
Yeah, I had a lot of people do the thank you lot.
Pretty cool when you have one of those jobs, you know. I mean, a lot of jobs are useful, you know, everything from your financial advisor to your garbage man. You want to thank them, but how often do you actually do it? I mean, you ever go out and run out in the street, hey guys, thanks for picking up my trash twice a week? Or, you know, it's really means something that people take the time to do that because they don't have to. And even though, you know, they're appreciative of it, especially if you're Gregory Ricks or you're Jude Heath or Dwayne Stein, because you're saving these people thousands and thousands of dollars or making them money. But, yeah, people still take the time, say thank you. I even met someone the other day that wrote a thank you note. It was amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, so in the estate planning world, we need to get down to business here. When you see this woman that lived to 117, how does that filter through the processes going on in the head of an estate planning attorney?
Well, you know, it seems to me, you know, she's had a long-term health plan, you know, pretty well established. She's doing a great job there. But it also presents, you know, a much larger window to kind of get your estate in order at the very core. But yeah, you know, it sounds like she's making the most of her assets, the most of her money, and so she's from that perspective, she's on the right track. That's
all right,
for sure.
Let me put it to you like this: she retired at age 65, so she retired 52 years ago. Do wills sort of have an expiration date? I mean, is there anything you would recommend if your will's over 5-10 years old, you need to get it updated?
No, look, the wills don't expire as long as they're valid with form.
Are you sure? What if it was written on parchment?
Doesn't matter what it's written on.
Okay. Wes Blanchard's in studio. We'll talk some estate planning coming up next. If you have estate planning or financial question, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. We have in studio with us Wes Blanchard of W.J. Blanchard Law. Oh, I can't do the Italian accent, so but look, he's a state planning attorney. He really likes to write wills and trusts. Now, we're talking about our friend from Italy that's 117 years old.
Emma Morano turned 117 this week. Last person alive that was born in the 1800s.
So I was just running income numbers here. Just say she had $500,000 at age 65, start taking out $15,000 a year, increasing it for 2.5% inflation, but now I'm going to change that to 2%. Because I'm having trouble here. 4% return. She's very, very conservative. She's old Italian family there. So she starts income with $15,000 a year. At age 89, she would have $525,000. She started with $500,000, 4% return. She would have taken $25,335 that year. So with 2% inflation, 4% return, increasing income every year for that inflation, I still don't get her to 112. I don't get her to 117. She runs out of money at 112. Once again, we go back, why do those income riders make a difference? You know, so then you're going to have to go up and look, we're looking at returns in this environment, not what happened in the 70s and 80s or what happened the past 8 years once coming out of the Great Recession. So if you go to 5, and the thing is, 2% inflation is what the Fed says we need to get at, and I still think that's too low a number. So I'm going to pump up to 2.5 on inflation. But I bumped up return to 5%. Now that gets her, let's see, did that work? 5% is huge. Well, that gets her, she has $578,000 at age 118. But you're really taking a leap.
Because, 5% return.
Yeah, 5%, right. 5% returns, pretty low for somebody conservative. I don't think you get that on the overall assets. There might be a block that makes 6% on average, another that's 4, some at 2, emergency money almost 0 in this world, and I think the 4 is more realistic, and I think the 2.5% on inflation is more reasonable expectation. But let's go 4.5 as my last calculation, and she runs out at 117.
So she can stop eating the raw eggs and stuff every day.
In that year, she would have taken $54,000 because of inflation.
So how?
Think about when she retired 52
years ago.
2 years ago, what'd the Big Mac cost? Well, was there Big Macs? No.
The guy who invented the Big Mac probably wasn't even born. so she turned 65 in 1964. We can all easily do that math. No, there was no Big Mac, right? Because the Big Mac inventor, crud, now we got to look this up. When was Big Mac invented?
I think the McDonald brothers were on it at that time, but Ray Kroc had not found them and acquired it yet.
Now, the guy that invented the Big Mac, remember he died this week too. He was a franchise owner in Pittsburgh, and he used to make it for himself. He liked the double hamburgers, but he had a problem because the patties would slip off of each other, so he stuck a piece of bread between them. And
yeah, I was really referring to the overall McDonald's concept.
It went nationwide in 1968. They found his creation in 1967, so yeah. She retired before the Big Mac. But we do know what it cost in 1974, the Big Mac.
Yeah, what's that, about 65 cents?
65 cents. That's what it costs.
About $4 now.
Is that what it is? I hadn't had a Big Mac in years, to be honest.
Yeah, well, and we did a show about this at the beginning of last year. You take it forward because it's been 30 years since that measurement. We did the show in 2014, I guess. 30 years since that Big Mac was 65 cents. It got to the price it was in 2014. And then what will it be in another 30 years? and you have to take it on an exponential graph, not on a linear graph, $20. That's what a Big Mac will be in 30 years. Your retirement plan, got that factored in there? You know, sure, you can say, good, I got $50,000 a year in income, plan for retirement. That's not going to go as far. That's going to get you, that whatever you're paying for a Big Mac today, in 30 years will get you one-fourth of a Big Mac.
Here's some other things to think about this when you're trying to plan your will, maybe a trust, and especially from a will, so much changes over the years, but her retiring, at what was her retirement year?
1964.
I put in the wrong number here. Let's go to that. Let's see. Average income in her year of retirement in the U.S. here was $4,600. The average new car cost was $3,500. A gallon of gas was about 30 cents, and a loaf of bread cost 22 cents. So we're somewhere between what bread now is about $3.50, gallon of gas $2.
You must not buy the nice bread.
Well, I don't know. I honestly, you know, I'm at a point that Sunbean or the wheat, I kind of buy two kinds, and that's what I buy. I just pull it off the shelf and put it in my basket. I'm not price shopping bread. So,
well,
does it cost more than that?
I should tap
the
brakes.
It's like, oh, I can't pay that. I really wanted a ham and cheese sandwich, but I'll just have it without the bread.
No,
the bread's too much.
Look, this is the dad talking, because whenever they want peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and you have four kids, I got to make four different sandwiches for the kids, and then I got to make two for me. So that's six sandwiches. That's 12 pieces of bread. That's half a loaf. So I'm buying bread almost every day. I am well versed in the price of bread.
Okay,
Sorry about that. Well, 99 cents if you go get the super cheap stuff that fell off the back of a truck in Romania somewhere that you don't even recognize. The store brand's usually between 129, or sometimes it'll be on sale for 99 cents, 129 to $2 for the store brand. If you go get the nice stuff that has like some sort of mascot and a logo and it's like $3 or $4.
Maybe I get bread the wrong place. I think I pay more. They see me coming.
Well, see, the hot redhead, she likes the fancy pants bread that has kind of the dark crust and then has all sorts of seeds and stuff sprinkled on it.
Yeah.
It's like got 28 grains. Like, there's not even 28 grains to put in there. Y'all are making up grains. There's only like six grains out there, apparently. Seven maybe, tops. Now, those breads get ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they are tasty, though.
They are very tasty.
I'm almost on this bread price. Let's see.
Oh, you can trust me on the bread. I actually got some at 99 cents this week, and I was ecstatic that it was on sale. Ecstatic.
Bread's one of those odd things you can't really double down on, right? Like, you can't hoard bread because it goes bad. So it's just it's an unfortunate situation to be in, I guess, if you're using 12 loaves. Or 12 pieces a day.
It's not that expensive, but I do the math in my head when, you know, that bread that costs $1 today in 30 years, I hopefully will be somewhere around retirement, it'll cost $5 for the super cheap stuff.
Yep.
So, you know, when you save all this money and you have this income plan and you have this lifestyle picked out for yourself, it's going to decline every year if you're not accounting for it and drawing more of a paycheck. And increasing it in retirement. It's a pay cut every year. It's just like for the rest of us. That's what inflation does to you. Unless you got a raise this year, you got a pay cut because of inflation. What your salary will buy 2% less than it bought last year. So it's a mess, man. It's tough in regular times, but it's really tough when you're done working and you have no more money coming in and what your income stream is, that's it. If it's set for life, you just got to eat it. No pun intended. Where you at? You still looking up the bread?
Yeah, I'm getting like $3.75, $3, another $2.50, $2.25. Somebody, Costco multi-grain bread is good at around $2.25.
Yep.
Okay, maybe I was high, but
right. You buy the name brand bread. I buy the stuff that just says like the Times New Roman font that says bread on it, and that's it. There's no logo. There's no mascot. There's no commercials. None of that. Get the cheap stuff. All right, Wes Blanchard, any other thing you'd like to add from the estate planning attorney, a point of view on bread?
No, I think I'm all out.
Because when it does get super expensive, you could will it to your successors, and they'd be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I guess from the inflation standpoint, it's better to get. It's another reason to get started in your estate plan now rather than wait. I mean, if inflation is going to continue to drive the prices up.
All right. Hey, we're about to have to step aside for a break, but I have an estate story, and it's not really an estate planning story. It's both of y'all are going to be interested in Normandy, France. This guy inherited a house from a deceased family member, and he was getting ready for the estate sale. So he was fixing up some of the furniture. One of them was cracked. So he turns the couch over, and hammered to the underside of the couch was a little box. He takes the box out. There's a bunch of gold coins in it. He goes, "What the heck? I'm going to check all the furniture now. Uncle Joe's a crazy man," or Jean-Jacques Pierre, whatever it is in France. So he ends up finding more gold coins. And then he keeps digging, and he tears the house apart, finds two gold bars.
Wow.
So we'll talk about that succession plan, because the guy was dumb to leave it stashed around his house. Big tax hit. We'll talk about that coming up. 504-260-0995. If you have a question for Gregory Ricks or our estate planning attorney, Wes Blanchard, we can take your calls. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. I'm Gregory Ricks, your host of Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I like that song. I always like that idea, giving all our secrets away. It's like that farmer giving out the seeds. His coins. You know, they ask him, "Why are you always giving your seeds away to the other folks? You've got the best stuff. It's like you're just crushing it." He said, "If I don't give it out, it's going to run down my crops at some point with their bad stuff." Well, you know what? We want to pull the financial community up by the bootstraps and improve everyone. And if you learn something from me, tell your friend. Call your friend in Kentucky. Tell them, listen to Winning at Life. We want to spread the word. So, yeah, we'll give all our secrets away. Even those about melting down gold.
All right, so I got your attention with this story, didn't I, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, this got my attention, too. So in Normandy, known for their not very welcoming beaches in history, a guy, some French dude, discovered his newly acquired home was actually a gold depository, just a freelance gold deposit box is what it was.
Now, how did he inquire? It is his house? He inherited it?
He inherited the house. He inherited the house from a family member,
okay,
straight up. And, look, he already had furniture and stuff, so he was going to sell the old furniture and bring his stuff in. Apparently, some of it was in disrepair, and in fixing one of the couches, he had to flip it over, and he found a box that was hammered, that was tacked to the bottom of it, just a little thin box. And he yanked it out, opened it up, and there was coins. And he's like, "What the heck? Gold coins? This looks like real gold." He probably bit it. And then he probably did the happy dance, and then he tore up all the furniture in the house.
But it turned out to be gold coins in that box.
Straight up, legit, 100% gold coins. It was 24-karat magic in the air, or in the sofa.
Wow.
Yep.
Bruno Mars is going to have to write a follow-up song. So the guy goes and tears up more furniture, and sure enough, he finds more gold. Finds a little in the easy chair, finds a little behind the headboard.
Now, was this some mansion he inherited or something? Because this dude had money that died. Because, look, you're not going to go around my house, find a box of gold, a jar of it here and there, dude. You got to have some money just to leave it sitting around and not need it for all of your life.
Well, I'll tell you this, that the house had to be of some sort of size. If you saw, the article says that the man found 12 kilo bars of gold. So just while we're on the break there, I asked Siri, I said, "How much is that?" 26 pounds. He found two bars that were 26 pounds.
Yeah, that's what they were tossing around in that. Remember the movie Three Kings where they go get Saddam's gold or whatever. Yeah. The big toss bar that Ice Cube had, that's 26 pounds of gold right there.
That's incredible.
You miss that and that hit lands on your foot.
Well, here's the thing that I would have done different. What I would have done is not declared the gold. I wouldn't have told anyone
hadn't
about
told
it.
What happened?
No, I haven't. Okay. I wouldn't have. Yeah, I should probably finish the story first. All right, so now he tears up the furniture. He tears up the floorboards. He tears up the house, and he finds a total of. Can they hear that on the? Am I hearing that in my headphones? There's a party going on Howard Avenue here, right outside the iHeartMedia studios. There's a Christmas party. Is that Mr. Bingle? Because they had the Mr. Bingle float out there a couple years ago. 5,000 total gold pieces. 5,000 coins of gold. So that goes in addition with the two bars of 12 kilos of gold. And I don't know what an ingot is. I-N-G-O-T, but he found 37 of those.
It's like smaller bars.
Is that what an ingot? Am I saying it correctly, please?
Ingot.
Thank you. Yep, there's the pronunciation. Ingot. You got it right. God, I'm such a bumpkin sometimes. All right. So 37 ingots of gold, new word for Parker here. 5,000 gold pieces, two 12-kilo bars of gold. All totaled up $3.7 million in gold. So after he gathered them all up, this is going to be nasty because he has now a gigantic tax structure facing him in France. It's going to take away 45% of the gold that of the price he gets when he sells it. But these punks in France are even worse than that. They're going to charge him 3 years of back taxes because the deceased relative failed to declare the gold. So now he's got to pay taxes and penalties on this $3.7 million worth of undeclared assets. That's a sorry tax structure if you have to start declaring all of your assets and not what you made that year, not the wealth you produce, but just the wealth you own. That's subject to taxes under French law. It's basically just theft. They can go by and just take this part of your estate every year. Boy, that's I would not stay in a country like that.
Yeah, that stinks. That's how long does the jubilation of finding all that gold actually last once someone walks in and says, I'm going to have to take probably over half of this by the time everything shakes out. Now, look, 50% of something is better than 50% of nothing. We'll all agree there, but it just kind of doesn't see, it puts a sour ending to the story. That's for sure. And, we were talking about it on the break here, $3.7 million, and he's being hit with 45% for an inheritance tax. That's a nightmare scenario. Louisiana has eliminated not only the estate tax, but obviously you're not going to be taxed on what you receive as an inheritance. So, James, if you found $3.7 million worth of gold here, your inheritance wouldn't be taxed. Okay. But more importantly, even this deceased relative, his estate wouldn't even be taxed here. It's I think the exemption is up to $5.4 million. Yep. I think $5.45 million. So this would have had a really happy ending in the United States. It would have been a much better story. But obviously, you can't get what you want all the time.
But it's cool. I'm talking with a financial guy and an estate planning lawyer right here because we both know the reason he's hiding these, the reason he's putting them in old whiskey bottles and under a pile of linens in the closet and hidden in the walls and under the floorboard and hidden in the furniture is for tax purposes.
For that exact reason.
The tax laws and the inheritance laws, both of you guys' expertise, your fields of your study here, caused this guy to change his behavior. He wouldn't have to hide it if it wasn't for these onerous laws. If you had to give this guy advice, and let's pretend he's not living in France because we're not going to deal with that. If I'm in a similar situation here in America, what would you guys tell me to do with $3.7 million in gold? Not from the point of the guy who inherited it, but from the old rich uncle who accumulated in the first place.
I'm kind of wondering now, what did he do?
For a living?
Yeah, did he work in a gold factory or something? They thought he was walking off with wheelbarrows every day, but he's actually walking off with wheelbarrows of gold. I don't know.
Like just the guy in New York this week?
Dude had a ton of money. What's this?
Did you see the guy in New York this week who picked up a barrel of gold off of the back of the armored truck?
There was a Brinks armored car, and it had a bucket sitting in the back. It looked like a paint can.
Mm-hmm. I think it was, 30 or 60 pounds? He just walked right up to the back of it.
Dude, it was 90 pounds.
And started trotting off. 90 pounds. I mean, this guy was
Did
they struggling.
Get him?
I don't know. I hadn't seen him.
No. And they strung together the surveillance cameras going for like five blocks of him walking with this gigantic bucket. And there's a couple of times because it's a 90 pound bucket.
The door open? Or
yeah, they left the back
door was
the
wide open.
And forgot.
No, the door was
the
wide open.
The back door was open.
I think they even had a ramp, right? I didn't even notice that.
Dude, I saw the video 10 times. There wasn't a ramp.
Somebody
it's amazing.
Got fired.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
What was the total value? Do you recall? I want to say it was like $13 million worth, or maybe it was $3 million. It was something with a three. But
I think it was $3 million, but he had to like set it down and like catch his breath a couple of times, Gregory. This guy's walking off with 90 pounds of gold in what looks like a old horse feed bucket.
Yeah, that was amazing.
All right, so what should I do, though? Let's just say, you know, not by hook or by crook. Let's say, legally speaking, I've got a ton of gold. From an estate planning point of view, what should I do? Should I set up a trust? What would you recommend I do?
Well, so look, again, knowing his estate is going to be under that threshold, let's assume you had something that's over the threshold, $5.7
million. Okay.
A good idea, and this is sort of in keeping with the holiday spirit here, is to start gifting some of that to your relatives. You have that $14,000
exemption. All right, what's plan B? Because I ain't doing that.
Right. Well, at that point, you know, maybe you want to start looking at spending down to get under that threshold to make sure that your estate's not taxed.
That I like.
Again, the inheritance is not going to be taxed to the extent that you inherit it, but spend it down on yourself. Get yourself under that exemption. Enjoy life a bit. That's probably your first step. And then secondly, start looking into who you're going to give it to, how and when and under what circumstances. You know, whether it's a trust or just a flat will. But frankly, I would advise this guy to have a trust. That's a lot of money and a lot of assets to give away. So you have some pulling power there.
All right, Gregory, I'm going to talk to you next. I got $3.7 million in gold floating around my house. Certainly that's not the best way to invest my money. What would you do different and how what does that process look like? If you have a question, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. They want to get my gold on the ceiling. I ain't lying. Just a matter of time before you steal it. It's all right. Ain't no God in my heart. Welcome back. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. We're going over the story here. Some lucky SOB in Normandy, France, inherited a house from a long-lost uncle and found $3.7 million in various forms of gold, 5,000 gold coins, 37 ingots of gold, and two gigantic 26-pound gold bars were found. All right, we talked to Wes Blanchard on, how could we pass that along to our relatives? Any parting thoughts on that? Because then I want to move to Gregory. If I had $3.7 million in gold, how should I invest that? Because clearly there's no yield you're getting on it. There's no dividend, and there's got to be a better way. Maybe some of it can stay, some of it's got to go. But
it's got to be better than nailing it to the underside of furniture and hiding it in floorboards and whiskey bottle cases and things like that. And this doesn't go just for gold. This is it's a great analogy and it's a great talking point. But these are the kinds of things that just should spur your thought to plan for the distribution of wealth to your relatives. It's got to be along with the holiday season something that gets you on track towards making those initial steps. And I think that's really sort of the take home here is make sure that you have something better than this, right? Even if it's just a plain will, or if you want to get a little more complex with a trust, have something better than this. I think that's my parting shot on that story. Yeah,
Gregory, I have $3.7 million that I could invest. I ended up buying gold with it. How would you tell me to unwind, or would you tell me
Here's
to unwind
tax.
That?
First,
what should I do?
You got to understand tax implications. Because you have it and you need to sell it. So money's going to show up in the system unless you can go down and get somebody to issue you cash, go down to the gold office right over here off of, let's pick a street, Veterans. And, dude, I don't want it recorded, but I'll take a little bit of discount, give me cash, and I'm done. I don't think you're going to get that to happen. With that said, short-term tax rate, gold is taxed as a collectible, not that I inherited this house and get a step-up basis. It's a collectible. So the tax rate on capital gains on a collectible is 28%, but is that a short-term or long-term that you've had it? If it's short-term, it's going to be taxed as ordinary income tax rates, which puts you with the Obama tax about 43.5%, somewhere in that neighborhood. So are you wanting to pay taxes?
I don't know.
I'm going to look.
You tell me.
I have fiduciary responsibility. We have the Patriot Act rules. We have money laundering rules. I cannot tell you how to do a workaround. Is there some workarounds? Probably. You have to be very crafty. But you're going to need to pay taxes. You need to get yourself in a situation that you're paying a long-term capital gain taxes is what would be helpful here. Then you're taxed at 28%, a lot better than the France. So if the dude's in France, I'd pack up, move to America, and see if I could get that done there. Probably might have one of those vague discussion. I got this relative that's come into some money, actually gold. What's the tax implications? You know, that tax attorney talk. Look, I want to buy an hour of your time. Let's have a conversation. Preferably at the bar down the street, away from the office as well. So you want to get in a capital gains tax situation, and I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I've got to sell it all right now. I'd rather do it over time because, just like one of our listeners on Periscope, his thoughts, you don't sell gold. Well, no, I don't want to sell at all because where do I think the price is going to be over a considerable amount of time? Higher. It's very hard. Go watch that gold show that comes on Friday nights with Parker and his crew trying to get gold out of a bunch of dirt. They have to move tons and tons just to get a little bit. Quite expensive.
Okay, so
I can't go into the money laundering part because
I'm okay with paying taxes. Look, I need to convert some of this into actual cash.
I just want to, how can I pay the minimum amount? Capital gains, you're pretty there. If you could shelve it all at capital gains right now here, Trump in his first 100 days might help you out with that on capital gains of collectibles. I doubt that's going to get touched. So if you're like, hey, I've got 3.7, I'd like to dump it, pay my basically a quarter of it in taxes, then I can go do what I want with the rest of the money. Go buy me get this house redone where I found the gold. You know,
you're
in a situation there. But now, if you're going to be taxed as ordinary income, I'm kind of about how can I manage tax brackets? I would be selling it probably over time unless the law's wanting to tax me. The IRS is wanting me to pay taxes on it all. Now,
how much of it would you leave in gold, though? Half of it, 10%, 20%, or would you only take out what you need immediately and cash that?
We have a lot of we're just speaking loosely here.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know all the implications of that and haven't done research. I just found about your newfound gold find, and assuming you're not having to liquidate it all, it's and I don't know why you would. It's a collectible considered here. You now own it and have acquired it. And I'd be selling it over time if I'm going to be taxed as MAC taxes, as capital gain. Look, and this goes back to my philosophy on gold. I'm not a gold bug. I'm not like, oh, let me buy some coins and keep buying coins every year and saving it up. I look at it more as if it's Walmart stock, Amazon, IBM, I'm kind of about the value of it. Being I've come into this way, I probably wouldn't sell it all. No need to. I've got a lot of value here. You're talking about life-changing experience. It'd be real easy to we're going to drop half of it, pay 28%, move on. We'll sell other in the future. But I've got to hire a security guard to guard my gold. Think about it. What are you going to do? Where are you going to put it? That's a whole other matter.
Yeah, what are you going to put it back under the couch?
And you sure don't want to be in the paper having found all this. That should not be an open discussion of any kind. You win, what's the Powerball this week? Say it's $50 million. I know it was big or something last week, about 20 people won it at a factory or something and splitting it. But if you come into $50 million, win the Powerball, you're wanting to take the lump sum, okay, you're going to net, say, $27 million, just throwing a number out there. How many people would you go tell?
Nobody.
I'd tell the wife and the tax attorney. Because we're going to have to make plans of what to do with this, how to be efficient on taxes, and then what to do with the money. And I'm sure not wanting to go on a board on TV and hold a poster of a check or something like that. It still goes down to that, is you just don't need to be telling. You've got to work through this and figure out what's going on, because every political campaign in the country will be calling you for a donation.
Yeah, I don't know if I would tell my wife immediately, because I would want to mess with her head. Just buy a new car. Where'd you get the money for that? Oh, it'll work out. We'll be fine. All right, Wes Blanchard, do you have any weird stories of collectibles, gold or otherwise, in estate plans that ends up tripping people up? Anyone fighting over someone's Beanie Baby collection or something?
No, we hadn't run across anything like that. But, you know, I'm feeling a little more prepared nowadays, right? Talking about this kind of thing. But no, look, it's collectibles are stuff that, you know, that's what some folks do that. And so that's an important part of estate planning as well. Again, you don't want to screw it to a box underneath a sofa.
You know,
have something better in place.
You're right. We've got clients that have gold coins and gold bars. I do. Considerable amount of gold, and they're holding it, not wanting to sell it all, but it's kept in safe places. It's in security vaults that large firms have, and it's in trusts. To dictate, they want that to go to those particular family members. So they're exerting some control, not just putting it in a will, but it is specifically in trusts and going somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, people fight over money, but I've always been interested in it from the estate planning attorney action on things like that aren't money. Like, what happened to all of Al Copeland's toys when he passed away? I mean, we're all familiar with his boats and his big old trucks, and they were in half the parades, and they had that little place over there with Causeway and I-10.
Well, you're saying you don't see them in parades anymore.
Well, I don't know what happened to them. And that's kind of my question.
Sold off over time.
Oh, man, that's so sad. So you wouldn't want to keep that as like a keepsake, but then again, you can get $400,000 for the monster
Once
truck.
Again, it's taxes on stuff that has to be dealt with. Also, are you in the same cash flow that Al was in, where he could afford to maintain and operate all those toys? When you look at how many people are splitting up that empire, everybody's not having the same cash flow to keep those boats going.
I wonder what Allstate charges for insurance on a monster truck. Because for my minivan, it's not that bad. But a monster truck. Pretty high liability on that. All right, you got a minute here. Dazzle us with some estate planning wisdom here. Wes, let me just put you on the spot.
Yeah, look, the one thing you want to think about is you're with all your relatives during the holiday season. It seems like an awkward time to bring this kind of thing up, but it's what's necessary in order to get the subject broached. So feel free to blame it on us if that's what you want to do. Blame it on the show. Blame it on us.
Welcome. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. You can also send us a message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Email us, gregory@gregoryricks.com. Something we did on the Daily Wrap this week that we need to spend a little more time on now that we have a little more time. is the process by which you get your 401k analyzed. Is the 401k analyzer, it's a service from Gregory Ricks and Associates, and it's for those of us like me. Basically, the only retirement savings I have to speak of is a 401k, and that's most Americans. So don't be ashamed if that's where you're at too. If you've got more than that, then you're ahead of the curve. Good for you. But let's talk about the people who aren't as financially well-rounded, and that's just the 401k only people. Angie, your only investments for retirement 401k? You know, you've got the gold bars under your couch. Is that what you're doing? Oh, well, I know what we're doing in 2017. We're getting her a 401k, and I'm getting a Roth IRA. That's what we're doing in 2017.
Well, the core is the savings first. I had a discussion with someone last night at the end of the party that came up to thank me for what we do on the show and listens all the time. And I said, you know, he's not in position to have retirement money. Things have been tough, but he's starting to save. And the first thing to get in the right place, like for Angie, is that emergency savings so that, look, retirement dollars, even though I'm not the buy and hold guy that just we're going to buy gold, IBM, Walmart, Amazon, and just hold it forever, not that. But you do have to take a longer term view, and you don't want to disrupt retirement money, especially if you're putting it away tax efficiently. Then you can't get to it because usually there's rules like IRAs, Roths. Kind of have to leave them alone before age 59 and a half. So that's why we need emergency money, that if we're needing to get to some money, we have it versus having to pay taxes and penalties in getting to that money.
All right, so it's a two-step process for Angie then.
See, I listen. I'm working on the emergency money first.
Yeah, it couldn't be that you're just spending all your money and you're unable to save. It's that you've been listening to the show so well.
Exactly.
That you're working on the emergency fund first. All right, so magic happens. Angie gets the emergency fund built up, starts plowing money into a 401k. Then she's with the rest of us. And the problem is we're not financial advisors. We have limited knowledge, if any, on the subject. So I'm talking to you, the person listening to the show. When you set up your 401k, it was your first day on the job. You did the same thing I did. You just flipped through a bunch, maybe looked at some charts. This one looks good. This one looks horrible. This one looks all right. All right, go with that one. Boom, set up. All right, now teach me, you know, where the bathrooms are and where the coffee machine's at. And it was part of a whirlwind of your first couple of days on the job. That's about how much thought you put into it. But this is going to be your main vehicle for retirement, something you put maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes tops worth of time into. So now that you got some money plowed away and you want to go reevaluate that, this is the process we have set up to do. But we don't even talk about 401ks and investments and financial products until apparently we need to learn a lot about the guy that's owning the 401k, Gregory. Because when I look through the introduction process, it's all questions about the guy, and some of them are pretty personal.
Yeah, sorry. Kind of is, because it's that person's money and how they think about it, how they look at it, what's the purpose of it. You want to find out what the purpose of it is. How much time does it have to work? So then you can start assigning it the right job. And to get it in the right job means to get it into the right investment. And then what is your horizon? Does it mean you're buying something to hold forever? But when does it, the time horizon or how much time does it have is when will it possibly need to kick out income? So then you can start assigning it strategies or looking at using financial tools in the mix, kind of like what we talked about. Our Italian friend that's 117 years old, at some point, you know, how long will it have to work? How much money is being assigned to that job? And the purpose of it ultimately is to kick out income.
And the thing we spend the most amount of time here in the sign-up process for the 401k analyzer service is on risk tolerance. The 1, 2, 3, 4, there's like 6 questions here, 6 processes, and some of these are long answers here. Which one applies to you the most? And is that really the most important aspect about finding out about the person that's about to get their 401k
analyzed?
As much
time as we spend on it doesn't necessarily, we've gauged how they're going to react to that or smaller negative numbers. That you're always going to have swings, even if you're climbing up. So your account goes up. At the end of every year, you're up for the last 7 years. But during those years, you'll probably have some negative impacts in that. And I'm making an assumption because we've had a pretty good run on the market up until, say, the past 2 years. But after the 08 downturn, it was climbing its way back up. So with that said, it's still going to move around, have dips. So on those pullbacks or corrections, how is that going to affect you? We need to know, because in some blocks of the money is going to have some short-term negative movement. And what you want to gauge is how they're going to react. Even though you have them sign off initial and write in what their tolerance is, their reaction to it may not be what they said. So you need to spend time on it. They need to understand how these things work. And it also helps protect themselves from knee-jerk reactions. And you are wanting to take a longer-term view.
And when you tell the stories about people who claim risk tolerance and they happen to be wrong, they always claim that they're more aggressive and or risk tolerant than they are in real life. Never does it go in the other direction, where they're like, oh, I just didn't lose enough money in this downturn.
Look, we don't want to lose money, but we know there's going to be negative movement. Our job is to try to keep it on the upside, make more right decisions than wrong decisions there. But if they're aggressive, saying, oh, I don't mind a 20% swing. Well, maybe sometimes what they're looking at is, oh, the upside potential is more so what they're looking at in that risk analysis versus the downside. Yeah, I want 30% upside, but I want zero downside. You're on the wrong planet for that. It's not realistic. But accepting a 30% upside and say I'm good with negative 15 or 20% at times, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have that type of outcome on the in the long range. I think those swings could be more devastating to a portfolio. I just don't believe in being aggressive. I want growth, but I also believe you should not have a lot of tolerance for big moves to the downside.
And I like how this one question is worded here. Which of the following scenarios would make you more uncomfortable? Because the assumption here, both of them make you uncomfortable, but which one's worse? Making an investment and watching it decline in value, or selling an investment and watching it increase in value? Certainly everyone would say decline, but if the question exists, I guess I'm wrong there. There's some people that swing the other way.
Yeah, but what will bother people most is the decline in value. You know, when you ultimately, you're always selling something, and what you typically are doing is selling it because you think it's hit its max value, or it's done with that purpose or job now, going the other way. And then I'm like, why are you worried about what it's doing now if you chose to sell it? We've moved on. Unless there's a reason to sell it, then it takes a break. And let's say you're buying it back at a lower price. That would be the scenario. And then what if you got it wrong? Then where do you think it's going? Are you wanting to buy back in because it's still moving up? You know, then you're getting into a lot of decisions there.
Well, when you find the people that are have very little or no risk tolerance, you go back and you look through the 401k plans that I've been exposed to, there's not a whole lot of options that they give you that match that level of non-aggressive investing. Safe investing, I should say.
Repeat that again.
Out of all the, because there's different options, there's different levels of how aggressive people want to be, how much risk tolerance they have. If you're on the lower end of the scale, if you want no, if you accept no downturns or just minimal.
Yes, my tolerance is zero.
Then, I mean, how many options do you have in the 401k? Just a handful. That basically knocks out, in some cases, 80 to 90% of the options.
So that can also go with your time horizon. If you're within 5 years of retirement, you could get shifted. You could shift to that to kind of say it's more about what I'm putting in, not what it's accumulating. I'm fine with maybe a few percent. You might go to treasuries, short duration bonds. But if you think we're at a market top on equities or kind of, I don't have any tolerance for equities, then yeah, you're dialing that back. But if you're kind of saying, I just don't have any tolerance for risk. I got to be very conservative. I'm age 30 and I plan to retire at 70. Then it is going to be more about what they're putting away. Just because you're wanting to put money in a 401k, whether you have 5 more years, 10, or 40 more years to work, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to load up on risk to get it done. I still go back to tortoise and hare. You know, if you can get consistent forward-moving returns without big negative pullbacks, you could well win in the long run, depending on the timing of your retirement.
Who needs to call in and be a part of the 401k analyzer service? Anybody that's got a big
anybody that's got a 401k and would like some help and guidance for that, of getting forward, getting more information to make decisions. You still got to push the buttons, but you've got to improve your decision making.
All right. It's one of the services from Gregory Ricks and Associates. We'll continue with Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. If you have a financial situation, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Beer. I'm having a record year. Quarter notes and Hank's halftime. I'm pounding on this heart of mine. Song to song, I pass my time with these speakers on 10. Your good and gone keeps me up all night, along with songs in the key of life. I'm either gonna get over you or I'm gonna blow out my ears. Yeah, you're out there now doing God knows how.
Having a record year. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. If you have a financial situation, not sure what to do, you found a couple of gold bricks under a couch in Pankerville, you can give us a call if you don't know what to do.
Where's Pankerville?
It's...
Is that Mississippi?
No, it's Louisiana.
I'm not familiar with Pankerville.
Near Napoleonville, Pankerville.
No, Napoleonville, I know that one.
I got Brokeville. You go by there on the way to Pierre Part, which if you go beyond Pierre Part, takes you to Morgan City.
Okay,
I think
see it.
You turn off exit that takes you, if you... It's one of the exits heading to Baton Rouge. You take a left, and if you follow that road, that'd take you to Donaldsonville. But you hang a left, and you go towards Pankerville, unless you're wanting to head on down to Crawfish Country. You know, that's getting cranked back up.
I see what you're talking about here. It's the last town before Pierre Part, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So, hey, some good news here. We talked about the hard times that it can be to be over 50 years old in the job hunt. It is tough. It's tougher than it was when you were in your 20s, 30s, and 40s to land that next job. But when you try and put it in perspective over what previous generations were facing, way, way better than what previous generations of seniors had to do. It used to be if you lost your job after 50 or 60, you might as well just retire. All you're going to get is what they call, and they even have a term for it here, the old person job. The guy that's wearing the blue vest at Walmart, saying hello to you when he comes in. You know, the guy that checks your ticket at the World War II Museum, you know, if that's not a volunteer. But just 1.4% of job seekers in their early to mid-50s landed what they, in this article, they call an old person job. Just 1.4% of them ended up with an old person job if you were searching in your 50s.
So what are the rest ending up with?
Well,
are they moving on to other career type jobs?
62% of them end up with a full-time job, which doesn't sound that great. It's like, oh, my God, I only have a 62% chance of getting a full-time job. Well, yeah, and that's not good when you compare it to 40-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds. But that same age group back in just 1995, 20 years ago, only 44% of them ended up with a full-time job. So you need to be thanking your lucky stars that this happened now and not 20 years ago.
So actually the number's pretty good and improving over time, it appears. That, and it goes to industry. I had somebody the other day that was in talking to me, and because of layoff and in his industry and trying to find job, and I asked, are you looking at other industries or moving outside? He said, that's actually where all my applications have been, is outside of that, and hasn't found. So I don't have a timeline on how long that would go for somebody, but you know what? You've got more people living longer, working longer, and if you have people that are in that age and are really good at what they do and a lot of experience, you know, there is reasons to hire them as well. This isn't going to be, well, let's shed everybody over 50 and go get 20-somethings. It's not always going to work out well that way.
Well, a lot of the credit goes to the health of baby boomers. Not only do we have much better medical care now than we did 20, 30, 40 years ago, but baby boomers are taking care of themselves better on their own. With medical assistance aside, they're just more robust, living longer. And 50 now is not what 50 was 30 years ago. 50, you can still be on a roof popping shingles in someone's plywood up there if you want to. I mean, I'm not saying you want to. That's not a very fun job. But even when you look at the physically demanding jobs, the studies show that there is no, Gregory, not a little, not a small percentage, there is no decline in the productivity in the manual labor jobs for people in their 50s.
It's interesting. I've had conversations with people that says, you know, I'm, because of the physical nature of my work, I'm not going to be able to do it a lot longer. And that conversation usually comes from somebody in their 50s. So they know what they can do, but it's interesting that the overall study shows it's not really in effect.
Well, and that's a great point you're making, because, of course, there's some jobs that you just can't do in your 50s. Drew Brees is not going to be throwing the slant route at 55.
You sure?
Well, not in the Superdome. Not in the Superdome. Okay. He may be playing for Jacksonville at that point because they need a quarterback. But that means for everyone that you just described whose productivity does fall off, there's more workers who are actually more productive to make that average come back on the positive side of the dial. And in many industries, you are more productive, even in a manual labor situation, because of your experience, because you're more of a supervisor, because you're more efficient, because you can train people, then you're still on the job making more money than you were.
Technology, robots, other equipment or design could reduce some of that physical nature as well that makes it more efficient for them. Where 20 years they did it this way, and it's like, yeah, that was way too complicated and took too much out of the employees. We have better designs now to do that job. It'd go to manufacturing, you know, where machines are probably designed to put more of the widgets together than somebody actually doing it. How much things change.
I remember my parents used to, and especially my grandparents, used to make references to, you're going to end up a ditch digger. No one says that anymore because no one's a ditch digger anymore. You go rent a ditch witch, or maybe your company owns one, and then you plow that ditch up in just 1 hour, and then you go do something else. You have to do more. No, there's no one that spends all their time digging ditches anymore. I mean, that just doesn't exist. So that, you know, manual labor.
Just those on the chain gang, huh?
Well, if you have for fun or for stimulus projects. But it's manual labor is not nearly as manual as it was, and that means not only can they do the job, but they don't wear themselves out as bad either. Now, here's another cool little statistic. There's a handful of people that want to retire temporarily. And I don't hear a lot of these stories, but when the article says this is a fairly common practice, take some time off, not work, be semi-retired for about 4 or 5 years, I don't know, visit family, do some traveling, and then they want to get back into the workforce. most of them are able to do it within within a 2 year span of when they start looking again. That didn't used to be the case in generations past. Yet again, do you know these people? 40% of people who retired just to take a break were able to return to work typically within 2 years.
Oh, I've got a client recently that came back in because he's going back to work, wanted to change his income plan, basically reduce it or stop it because he's like, yeah, I retired and didn't like it, so I'm going back to work.
Now, if he had tried to do that in the 70s, from the 70s to 1990, he only has a 25% chance of getting back in and finding a full-time job comparable to his last one.
You know, can I shift gears a little bit?
Sure.
It affects marriages, retirement sometimes.
Because now you got to put up with them for...
Yeah, it's there all day. He's here all day. He needs to go find something to do. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness he found something. He decided to go back, driving me up the wall. You get those as well. And then on the other side is, I am so glad he's retired because now we can travel. I am so glad he retired. I have a lot of things that need to be done. You know, so you've got the positive and negative. And this is, and that sounded just like I was women speaking about men, but it's on the other side of that as well.
Here's another good sign for you. If you're looking for that next job in your 50s and 60s, 26% of entrepreneurs who launched businesses in 2015 were between age 55 and 64. That's up from just 14% 20 years ago in 1996. So if you want to start a second career, or if you want to quit working for the man and be your own boss, this is happening more than ever. People are starting businesses after 55.
I agree with that because I see a lot of retirees say, yeah, I'm leaving the firm, but now I'm going into consulting. So they're setting up their own operation. Another one recently said, yeah, I'm starting an inspection business. And that's where I go back to, what does retirement look like in the future? It should be options. Hey, I just want to watch the NFL Network all day long every day. That's what I want to retire and do. Okay, but I'll tell you what, a lot of people are out there looking for, what can I do? Can I do another business? I don't want to do this. Or, yeah, I'd like to retire from this one. But that doesn't mean they're going to stop working because I'm retiring from here. But I'm going to start a business. We're going to compete and rock their world. You know, there's so many things to do.
Yeah, and this Gallup poll breaks down that number, that 26% of new businesses that were started by people over 55 in 2015. 32% of them said they did it because they wanted to be independent. Like I said, they don't want to work for the man. They want to be their own boss. Only 24% of them said they did it because they needed to supplement their income. This was somewhat of a voluntary transfer that was more of a luxury than a necessity. And, man, when we read some of these other articles, it sounds so bleak for anyone over 50 looking for a job. This is a lot more optimistic. I mean, you have to compare it to previous generations. But there's a lot of reasons to be positive if you're looking for a job over 50.
It's a different world. A lot of opportunity. They're looking at you not just having to retire and live a few years. Retirees live a long time. We're going to pay a few bills and be back here in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap on iHeartRadio. Welcome back. Winning at Life, weekly wrap. We do this every Saturday, 10 to 1. I was about to say at 7, but that's for the daily wrap. We're on the radio live 6 days a week. Yeah, I know it's unbelievable, but we have a lot to talk about, a lot to tell, and money. When would you want to ever stop talking about that? There is so much. We never run out of something to talk about regarding money, just like the dollar probably going higher on Monday and the euro going down because no vote in Italy. Then on the 14th, we've got this coming up, and James and I are on different ends, but I still think it's the same outcome.
59% now.
I even went up and went back down on it in the show, but I'm still at 94%. We'll see how the weekend goes. Further reading. What we're talking about is the rate hike. Janet Yellen is surely going to raise interest rates based on all these part-time jobs added.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they're way behind the curve. Politics isn't there anymore, so that can't hold them back. But, you know, what's worrying a little bit now is if we have the European Union in a little disarray, that it's not under their purview. The job of the Federal Reserve is in regard to monetary policy here and interest rates on money. But it over the last few years, we've seen her pull in about anything she wants to, as well as Helicopter Ben, about anything they want to lower or stand pat on where they are with interest rates.
All right. Hey, Angie, I just need to confirm something. I did not tell Gregory the answer to this question. I'm not holding up a piece of paper in front of his face. I'm going to ask him this question, and he has to just try and guess off the top of his head. Can you confirm that? I mean, I guess we could lie, but that's all I can do. Okay, half of all
America. I meant to talk to you about these blind questions.
You're
going to
nail this. This is going to be incredible. You're a ninja at stuff like this. Half of all Americans retire between in this 5-year span, between ages what and what? And it's a 5-year span.
Half of all?
Half of it's 51% of Americans actually pull the retirement
trigger.
It's
going to be in the 60 to 65.
Yes, age 61 to 65. Look at that. I told you you'd do it. If you add six, if you include 60, that's actually a 6-year range.
You're right.
61, 63, yeah.
But I'm right there in that range. That's where most of them come.
All right. So the one of the things we talked about earlier this week, and I just did a little more research on that topic because it kind of blew my mind, because I had it wrong. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, when people plan on when they're going to retire versus when they actually retire, do they usually retire sooner or later than they planned? And you said it was sooner, like it was a done deal. Hey, that was news to me.
Yeah, because I see it all the time.
Sure. But I mean, I was under the impression that, like, you say you're going to retire at 60, or you say you're going to retire at 65, and then you get there and you don't have enough money and you don't want to take the hit in your standard of living. So you're like, you know what? I'll just slog it out for 3, 5, 10 more years. But that's not the norm. The norm is people plan to retire around 65, and more than half of them have to pull the trigger before that.
Yeah, they're making adjustments. They'll settle for less. They'll make lifestyle changes and such. This isn't because they're retiring with raises all the time. Some of it could be layoff, could be health, or I'm done, or I want to start up that business.
Let me break down the other little 5-year windows here.
Well, where were you on that? I answered between the ages of 60 and 65. So where were you on that?
I would have guessed more like 70, Gregory.
I think that's the future, possibly because of longevity, but it's going to be a ways down the road. It's going to be another generation that cycles to that.
I would have straddled 70. I would have said 68 to 72. That's what I would have said. But of the Americans, when they retire, or of all the people that are retired, less than 1% of Americans retire before the age of 50. 1% of them retire between 50 and 54.
Can I go back? There's one clue, and you knew about it, though.
What's that?
Is when do most people turn on Social Security? And you didn't connect it with actually retiring. You just are turning on another income source.
Well, because most of the people we hear turning on early are still working.
Yeah.
So I didn't count that as retirement. Turning on Social Security does not mean retirement in my book. 13% of Americans retire between age 55 and 60. And, you know, the only people I can really think of that happily retire that young is like career military or career civil servants, like firemen, policemen. And a lot of people who work for the post office and retire fairly early compared to the rest of us too. You know, there's a handful of professional athletes that may retire pretty early and then not go back to work.
Now, what was this last age group you mentioned?
From 55 to 60, 13%. So then
they've got pensions and 401ks. They've got a pretty good income source.
Then we get to the big group. More than half of the country retires in that five-year window, 61 to 65. And then listen to the numbers later in life. This is kind of surprising, too. From 66 to 69, 12%. From 70 to 74, 10%. That's what I would have guessed. Look how wrong I am. Age 75 to 79, 4%. And then the number goes back up for people who retire from 80 to 84, 5%. And then the number of people that don't retire until sometime after the age of 85, 2%.
Yeah, it's a low number because I was going to say I don't know many of those that are still working 80s, and I have some clients that are working in their 80s, but it's rare.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of Tom Bensons running around. He's not retired. We wouldn't consider him retired, right?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's rare air to be in. I was surprised, though, to see the number. There's more people that retire between 80 and 84 than 75 and 79. And what does the retirement planning look like, and what's different about it when you retire that late, when you retire after all the deadlines and the markers and the RMDs and the contributions and, you know, 75 to 85? That's got to be a little bit different planning approach.
Yeah, especially when you get above 80, things start narrowing on what you can do with financial tools or creating those guarantees, guaranteed income. Risk should really be drawn back. You just shouldn't be exposed to much. I don't think it's suitable and best interest for the client. What, you're in a growth mode at age 83. If you've not gotten the right note, you're not going to get there. You know, when you kind of look at your time horizon, you're 83. What's life expectancy for males that make 65? It's about 89. Could you, and you're still working really good health? Yeah, you could go beyond 90, could get to that 100, but you could also be done the next day because your heart just stops.
Okay, so this is all a learning experience for me. You say this very matter-of-factly, but now I'm kind of worried because if you're retiring before you want to, I mean, what's the split on people who are forced to retire early, or they're laid off, or they get hurt, or they're disabled, or they just lose interest, versus the ones who retire early because, hey, I'm in a great situation and life's going to be awesome and I get to travel. I mean, that's got to be great for you, but the people who involuntarily retire early, that's got to be just a big life-changing experience. What a difference that is if you were able to work just five more years. You ever have to have that conversation with your clients? Listen, man, if you just work five more years, your entire life is going to be different for the next two decades. So that little five-year switch.
You're talking about retiring and then doing something else? Did I miss that?
Well, I mean, maybe. I guess I shouldn't have been so vague, but you ever have to try and encourage people, look, you just got to work five more years, period.
Oh,
it'll make a huge
because
difference.
Because we go about it looking at the math. What can the money do? What's reasonable expectation of return? How much do you have? And there's this woman that's a client that was trying to get me to tell her, oh, it'll be fine. She won't say, tell me it's going to be fine if I retire now. And I told her, I said, I cannot tell you that. She said, well, I'm wanting to retire in 6 months. I'm going to retire. How's this going to look? I said, it's going to be tight. You need a reverse mortgage. And here's where your income's likely to be. And there's not going to be upside to it the next 30 years because you probably shouldn't be retiring right now.
All right, we're going to talk about different ways you can access Gregory Ricks and Associates. Technology's changed in our business and may make coming on board more convenient than you had hoped. 504-260-0995 if you have any financial situations. I'm James Parker. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I kind of like that part. We're going to live forever. Can we work forever, too, if we're going to live forever? Or do we still need to do that 401k emergency? I still think you need to do all that, even if you're going to live and work forever. Because that's part of I have some of these, James. And look, this, once again, Winning at Life, iHeartRadio. Phone number is 504-260-0995. You have a few minutes left. We're going to get to Tracy here in just a moment. But it's, you still need to save. And I have people tell me, oh, I'm not retiring. What, you're going to die one day. It's the reality of it. But that's those that come back and say, you know what? I'm probably going to retire. They get the, what it is they don't never think of it. They're just working and it's all good. And all of a sudden they start having that conversation. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I can see 76 might be it for those that just want to keep going.
Yeah, so if you were a corporate middle manager at Blockbuster, you may have been forced into retirement and you were expecting to work forever. Tracy, member of the Total Wealth Authority and a partner of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm, she's going to be our guest next weekend. Welcome to the show. What can we expect from you in a week? Doing well. How are you?
Good, Greg. Thanks for a great party last night. We had a wonderful time.
I am so glad you attended and had a great time.
It was
just
awesome.
Everybody
really
participated in making that fun by being there and enjoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, real quick on the party, you know how a little side benefit of having it at the museum is it was like an extra facet of party entertainment. You had the band, you know, people could dance, you know, you had the drinks and the food and, you know, socializing around. But you could also walk around and check out historic exhibits and walk right by a B-17.
That was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was
actually
pretty cool.
Because I had never been in that room before, so it was pretty neat. The only thing I saw, Gregory, are pictures when you were giving the big checks out over there.
What now?
In the slideshow?
When you were issuing the big checks over there.
Oh, yeah.
The donation.
The slideshow. Yeah. We're big supporters of World War II
they
Museum.
Are. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay. Next week's guest, what are you talking
next
about?
Next week. So we're going to be on at 11 next Saturday, and we're going to talk about, since tax season is going to be coming up, people are going to be filing after the first. We're going to discuss some deductions you can take on your investment properties. And then we're not going to talk in depth about it because that's Jude's spot, but we're going to touch on some things that you may not have known that you can actually deduct on your taxes for your investment properties. You know, they have the standard interest, depreciation, repairs, and stuff like that. But they do have some things that I think a lot of people are not aware of. So we'll discuss some of that and hopefully be able to help them out a little bit when they start filing their taxes after the first.
Sounds great. Are you going to be by yourself or you bringing your partner?
I got the old ball and chain coming with me, so she'll be there.
Why don't y'all just get married? It's so funny because they were each other's date last night, and neither one of you brought your spouse?
No, it was just us. You know, they would have liked to come, but they had other things going on. They usually hang out when we go hang out. So
very busy
guys,
bunch.
They're best friends, too, so they go do their thing, and we do our thing, so.
Right, and thank you very much, Tracy. We'll see you next week. And that's something the hot redhead said to me. Her best friend's unmarried, and she says, well, whenever Stephanie gets married, she's going to have to marry someone that can hang out with you so I can hang out with her and y'all can hang out like Tracy and Stephanie do. She wants to copy that model. She likes that because, whenever Tracy and Stephanie hang out, the husbands hang out with each other, and so they're sort of best friends that are married to best friends. But all right, hey, here in the last segment of the show, we've been making technological leaps and bounds, and while it's not a mission to Mars or anything, I mean, look over what's hanging out over on the wall right there, a little Facebook live feed. So if you want to watch the show, you can go log in, find Winning It Life, the Facebook page, find us there. Also, we do most of our shows on Periscope. It was on earlier, kind of pooped out, so we're not going to turn it back on. But
this kind of stretches it on a three-hour show.
Sure. During the daily wrap, though, people have already sort of gotten into the habit. We have regulars there. We have new people come in. We get a lot of our questions. Probably about half of the feedback we get during a show comes from people thumbing in their thoughts on a Periscope feed. But it's not just for the broadcast either. You guys are implementing technology in the office as well. Talk about some of the changes.
Well, some of it is similar to the next piece we're adding to the Winning at Life show, and that is going to be doing go-to webinars during the show. So we have a place for you to see the charts and articles and interact with us through that as well. And we're hoping to kick that off maybe next week.
That fast?
Well, this has been a while. But it's close. I know you're going to come in for some training on it as well this week, I understand.
Heck yeah. Well,
But that's what we're doing in the office. Look, we're in multiple markets. We have people call us around the southeast of the country, but we've had calls from all across. We work with a family in Oklahoma as an example of the reach, and they wanted to work with us, and that's why you can do GoToMeeting. You can do Skype. That's what the phone's for, overnight packages, e-signatures. But what's cool is somebody in Biloxi kind of say, well, you know, I'd like to have a meeting with you, but not so sure about driving over yet. Or it could be somebody else that is west of here. And I'm not sure how far out, but they're probably 1.5-2 hours away. But they've come on board as a client. We did 4 online meetings with them to get to that point. And he just, because of his health and his business that he has to spend all of his time on, multiple businesses, he wants to work with us but doesn't want to come here. And that's where things have changed, is we can work with so many people, and we are having the face-to-face meetings right there sitting on the table. They can see me. I can see them. But that's optional as well. If you just want to do an audio meeting, we're good with that as well. Not, you know, somebody said, well, you know, I hadn't taken the curlers out of my hair. The guy said, look, I'm still in my T-shirt and boxers, but I want to do the meeting. So, okay, we don't have to do the video.
And I see a lot of balance on how people have changed their shopping habits, too. You know, we were talking about Black Friday earlier, and Hot Redhead did most of her shopping from her phone on the couch. And it's not just about, you know, saving money, and it's not just about convenience, and it's not just about the time. It's also about not settling for the financial advisor that's down the street. You know, there's a better one in New Orleans. And that shouldn't stop you from, you know, working with them if you're in Biloxi or if you're in Zachary or if you're in, what is it, Painterville? Yeah, see?
Absolutely. So wherever you can get internet.
Yeah, I do the same thing when I'm shopping. And if they don't have exactly what I want in the store, screw that. I'm going to go to Amazon or eBay or Walmart.com. I'll get what I want. And it's so easy to understand when you're talking about something physical, something tangible. You know, it's like, I know that laptop is cheaper online, or I know they have a better adapter that's not on the rack at Best Buy. If I go online, I can go get some weird one from China that's perfect. It's exactly what I want. So don't think about it just as convenience. Don't think of it just about saving time. It's also about not settling. You can go get the best guy. You can go get the guy you've been listening to on the radio and you trust, and you already have a rapport with us because you've been listening to us all this time, and you want to go start over new with some other financial advisor who you haven't heard him talk, you haven't heard all the feedback, you haven't heard him answer all these questions, you're just not as familiar with him. Why? You don't have to anymore. You don't have to settle.
I totally agree, and that's where technology changes that. There's an advisor I've heard talk that's on the West Coast. He does all his meetings in the afternoon, surfs in the morning, and they're all go-to meetings.
Wait, do you mean surfs the web or literally surfs like on water?
No, he has a surfboard. Real water, he gets splashed.
He's like a surfer dude, financial advisor?
Yeah. And in the afternoon, but he switched. He did used to live in Tennessee. He wanted to be a surfer.
Horrible
dude.
Surfing in Tennessee. Horrible surfing.
Yeah, so he moved to the West Coast, and he doesn't go to anybody's houses. He doesn't go to the office. He does everything online. And he thought that would take off in his community, but he says he has clients in multiple states. Now, that's where, when we envision the expansion of this show and rolling out, is how would this work? We do have people that drive in an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. But there's people that want maybe further, and there's those people that, nah, I don't want to do the drive. Well, that's where technology changes everything. I've got clients that only want to text and email. Oh, I'd rather not talk on the phone. Just email it to me or just text.
So are we going to have to put up a map at the Gregory Ricks & Associates office and put a little push pin everywhere we have a client across the continent?
Oh, we already do that. We heat map. the whole country.
All right. So, listen, if you're not, you know, six blocks away, but you still want to work with us, don't let distance deter you. Get the guy you want. Get the advice you really want. You don't have to settle for the guy that's closest or in the same hometown. Technology is a wonderful thing, and don't let it stand between you and a comfortable retirement or thousands of dollars because you didn't make a mistake in your investing that you otherwise would have made. Be a part of Gregory Ricks & Associates. Come on board. GregoryRicks.com, the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. Heck, if your financial advisor or your other financial advisor doesn't have an app, you need to put a little question mark next to him and ask him about it. In the meantime, stick around. Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein's coming up next. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
With Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.